C103. This is Eating Disorder Awareness Week, which is an international annual event aimed at raising awareness of all things to do with eating disorders. Trish Shiel is Clinical Manager of the Eating Disorder Centre in Cork, and Trish joins me. Good morning to you, Trish.
Good morning, Patricia.
And you are welcome to the programme. Now, have we any figures on the number of people who suffer from eating disorders in this country? Is it an impossible figure to get because some of it is hidden?
Absolutely right, but the figures we do have are 200,000 people. The Department of Health gave us those figures in 2013, suffer from eating disorders.
That's a huge,
but
huge
number.
But as
you say, it's probably so much of it is hidden, so it's very hard to get accurate figures.
Who is most at risk of developing an eating disorder?
Well, it is usually young white females at the moment. That's what we understand. But again, that is partly a huge myth. We're beginning to understand more and more that eating disorders, whilst they do mainly begin in the teenage adolescent years, but they affect people of all ages, all nationalities, all ethnic groupings, and so on.
And for years we believed it was only young girls, but it's young boys as well.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, 100%. And just going back to your point about hidden. The eating disorders being hidden, definitely with young men, it's more hidden, and there's a lot of shame and stigma about young men coming out to speak about them. It is happening, but the percentages of men attending here is always way lower than it would be for women.
Do we know what triggers somebody to develop an eating disorder?
We don't actually. We don't know exactly what causes eating disorders, believe it or not, with all the science we have available to us, but we don't. But what we do understand is how people can get out of it. But one of the biggest triggering things that we find is dieting. And that's hard for people to hear because our diet, our culture is saturated in diet material. But dieting is one of the biggest triggers. Yeah.
Now, the theme of the week is prevention. How can an eating disorder be prevented?
Okay, so as I say, we don't actually know what causes an eating disorder, but we do know what how people recover from them. So the things that we look for would be the minimization of social pressures on young people. So for instance, the thin ideal or looking a particular way, really trying to shift the focus off that to achievements, to the person, to the character of the person, to the attributes really of the person. Now you can see, even saying that we're up against a juggernaut of a culture really that mitigates against that. But that is a very important piece, and it's great to note that there's a lot of younger people coming out now actually advocating for body diversity, for size acceptance, for less of the shame to be attached to size and prejudice around bigger sizes.
Mm.
So that's one thing, but there are many others as well, Patricia. We would ask as well that schools would have awareness programs as part of their curriculum, and particularly for parents actually, for teachers and parents to become aware of the signs and symptoms of eating disorders, and obviously then for the children as well. But I mean, if parents are aware, then they're caught early and recovery is a lot faster, because an eating disorder is often breeds in silence, it goes underground. But if the signs are caught and somebody's caught early, then things are stacked in their favour.
Which leads us to recovery, because recovery is possible.
Oh, it is totally possible. It is totally possible. And again, another myth that's out there that's always there. But really, the eating disorder voice, because it is like a loud voice in a person's head, it's their own voice, it's not psychotic, that can be reduced to zero in many cases, through proper work on recovery.
Okay, stay there, because we have Gráinne, who is going to share her story of recovery. Good morning to you, Gráinne. And you're welcome to the programme. Now, you're a qualified nurse, you qualified in the United Kingdom, you were working here in Ireland. When did you realise that you had an eating disorder?
Well, Patricia, I was actually 37 when my eating disorder manifested. I'm sure that when I was in my younger teens that there were small snippets of it along the way, but I was actually 37 when it really came to the fore. And as Trish said earlier, diet was the start of mine, and I had had twin boys, and just a flippant comment that was passed to me one day overweight, and I just started to kind of take stock and started to do some dieting and exercise. And I suppose at this point there were other things going on in my life due to ill health, which wasn't anything to do with the eating disorder. I had to finish work, and I loved my job as a nurse. I was very committed, and to suddenly kind of told that I wasn't going to be able to do it anymore was very difficult. So I lost sort of who I was, my identity, what I was used to doing every day. I had to now adapt my life, which I had two small boys at home, which was lovely, and I was able to give them the time, and gradually I'd be able to accept that. But then on top of that, I had the worry of my boys went to school, and I suffered some separation anxiety, and a lot of it stemmed from just this lack of control. I wasn't at work, my boys were now in school, my identity was gone, my self-worth, I was beginning to lose who I really was, and that was really difficult. And then sort of in the mix of that, I had three bereavements within my family in the space of 7 months.
Goodness.
So again, it just all affected really, and there were three bereavements due to cancer. And my area was, I had worked in Marymount Hospice for many years, and I felt this was my area. I should have picked up on things, and I had huge guilt and I had huge self-blame. And this just triggered from what had started as sort of a diet and an exercise. I now used this. It was a coping mechanism, and it just got worse and worse and worse.
It was almost the one thing you had control over.
I felt that I could control what I eat, I could control how much I exercise, and I could really do this well because I was losing control of things around me. So it was very difficult. But as I've learned over many years of therapy, when you have an eating disorder, that's the thing that's controlling you.
How low did your weight go, Gráinne?
My weight went quite significantly low, Patricia. I personally don't like talking.
Okay,
to
that's fine. That's fine. But when you looked at, as a qualified nurse, when you would look at yourself in the mirror, what were you not seeing the effect that this diet?
I couldn't see it, and everybody around me. It's just because you're listening to this negative inner voice. And it's constant, it's like a 24-hour bully in your head. It's constantly telling you you're no good, you're useless, you're stupid, you're fat. And all of these words are what you hear on a daily basis. So you don't see, it's your family, it's my husband who's seeing the difference. And you become, I think one of the things about an eating disorder, and particularly for carers and for parents who have young people with eating disorders, is it's the eating disorder takes over you. It doesn't, it's not me as a person. I didn't change, but the eating disorder changed me. And you recluse, you withdraw from friends, you become almost to a point, you're kind of flipping over what you eat, how much exercise you do. You have to pre-plan all of this to get everything in. So it's so important to get that point out, is that your mood changes, you become down, you become moody, you can start an argument just over something very, very simple, and it's just to withdraw because you feel you're caught in this trap. So it's very important to remember that I was still the same me. And again, I think with people with eating disorders, their characteristics, they're usually very caring people, oversensitive, perfectionism, their qualities are very good, and they get lost when you become kind of taken over by this eating disorder. So,
and while a number of things, as you've explained, triggered the eating disorder, what was the point where you said to yourself, I have a problem, I need help?
Yeah, I think eventually, maybe after about a year of sort of going down this road and my family getting, my husband obviously getting very distressed, and then I thought, yeah, you know what, this is a problem now, because I had young kids and I wanted to get better. I didn't want this life, and I wouldn't want it for anybody else. It's just so destructive, so self-destroying, and I wanted to get help. And I think that was the first step. I took myself to my GP, and I suppose in the background, my nursing was still there. I still was quite acute of what was going on, even though I hadn't seen it for a long time. But when I asked for help, it was like a relief. But it was help, I suppose, even in my naivety of eating disorders at the time, if I thought, oh, it would be all fine, and it'd be like switching off the light, all those thoughts would go away and I'd be fine again in a week. I was to be admitted to an inpatient program, and I thought, sure, I'll be home in a week. But it's not. There's a lot of hard work. It takes a long time for recovery. You have to work hard again. It's a case of, you know, we alone can do it, but we can't do it on our own. So you have a really, you need to have a good network of support around you.
So you got, you went outpatient then, did you?
I went inpatient. I went inpatient for a 12-week program.
Okay.
And that was okay. It went, I did a lot of the work. I suppose sometimes I felt, because I was the older bracket, a lot of the girls that I would have been in the unit with were younger, and maybe my nursing again came out, and I felt that I was kind of caring for everybody else but wasn't addressing my own issues. And then sadly, maybe 9 weeks into, and I had a huge problem because I was in Dublin, and my family, my husband, had to bring my two kids up to me every week to see me, and it was really difficult because, again, I had huge guilt because of what I was doing to my family. So I found it really, really difficult to kind of put everything into the inpatient program because of the things that were going on outside. And I still wanted to be a mum, and my kids had just started school and I wanted to be with them. So it was really difficult for me. And then maybe 9 weeks into my program, we had a very tragic suicide in our family. So again, it just stemmed, and I felt I had to come home at this point. I needed to be with my family. So I had a lot of setbacks following that for the next sort of 6 and 7 months, really.
And then you continued through outpatient?
I continued.
Here in Cork?
In Cork,
yeah.
And that was the makings of me, really, because I was still able to continue my life as a mum and as a wife and attend my appointments, and I felt I was more together. And I was able to concentrate, and I had great therapy, and you have to work really hard at the therapy, it brings you to a good place.
And Gráinne, was it difficult for you to admit that you had an eating disorder to family and friends? Yeah,
it was. I think because there are lots of myths still about eating disorders, there's a lot of shame about it. There's like, it's a very isolating, so you do retract from meeting people because, you know, you meet friends, it's in social circumstances. I withdrew from all of that. So there is, and I think that's why it's so important now to raise awareness and to break the silence and to encourage people to talk, and especially young people. We had a wonderful launch in a secondary school in St. Coleman's Community College in Middleton yesterday, and the transition year students, some wonderful work, artwork, and it was inspiring to see their take on it, and that there is a certain amount of awareness, and we can improve that awareness and get people talking and talking openly with one another. Young people, there's so much pressure through social media and this thing about being thin and so many diets, and that we can encourage the young people to talk to one another, to talk openly, to come when they have difficulties and not feel ashamed.
Okay, well done. Well done, Sarah. I mean, your message is help is available. It might be a difficult road to recovery, but you can get there.
You can get there, and life is great when you do get there. And it's great to have this this anorexia, this voice gone, and that you can see things clearly, and there's a life. There is a life outside of it.
And your boys are doing well, and your husband's doing well.
My boys are doing very well, and yeah, my boys are doing very well. At the moment, you do worry. They're 16 now, and they're in that phase of being sort of consumed by social media. So you're always on the alert. But it's just awareness, education, and working towards preventing, and hope. And I think self-belief, just believing in yourself, being yourself. There's a lovely quote, be yourself because everybody else is taken. And I think that's something that we all have to be aware of. We all are unique. We all have wonderful qualities, and you can bring yourself out in those qualities rather than how we look all the time.
Well done. Let me bring back in Trish. Thank you, Grainne, for that. And Trish, Grainne has gone on to be a volunteer with the Eating Disorder Centre in Cork.
She has indeed. And isn't it wonderful to listen to the story?
Great story.
I mean, really, it is wonderful. It's life-giving.
Yeah, and I'm very conscious of families listening, parents listening, who maybe a son or a daughter is going through it, and they're trying to support them. And to hear Grainne's story, to know there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely. Oh, there is life. And yes, and Grainne volunteered with us to actually help on some of the parents' education programmes that we run here, because hope is a really important value to hold for eating disorders, and we hold hope all the time because recovery is possible. Families don't ever cause an eating disorder, but they certainly can be very much a part of the healing process of it.
Okay, so where do you direct someone for help? I mean, Grainne, I think it was very lucky in that it was a good doctor.
Yeah.
That she went to. Your GP?
We would certainly say go to the GP first. We really would. But then just make contact here. Definitely make contact with ourselves. If you want information, the national charity, it's a charity, they don't offer therapeutic service, would be Bodywise, which is the national organisation, and they will give you leaflets and booklets and so on about eating disorders.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
But the thing I would say, Patricia, more than anything, if anyone is listening and they think they may have an eating disorder, their mind might be telling them they don't need help, but they really do. And we would encourage any care, if you have any suspicions at all, really look for help. Reach for help, because these eating disorders need to be caught as early as possible.
Okay, and your website is Eating Disorder Centre Cork. Okay, we leave it there. Ladies, thank you for that, and thank you both for joining us on the programme this morning.
Indeed,
good morning to you. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Trisha Shiel, who is Clinical Manager of the Eating Disorder Centre in Cork. And